Investing in your employees now will create efficiencies, will help them grow. Like, you don't want folks in your organization that are just, they get to almost good, right? You want folks that get to good and go to great. If you have folks that are just almost good, you're going to be constantly chasing efficiencies. You're going to constantly be chasing, how do we improve our bottom line? How do we improve our revenue flow?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the B2B Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Nils Vinge, and today my guest is Miranda Dukonski. Miranda, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy talking to you. So this
Oh,
is great.
same here, Miranda. And you were a previous guest on the show way back at episode number 30 in the very early days. And we're up well over 100 episodes now, and so excited and thrilled to have you back. Keep on talking. We could talk leadership for hours between the two of us, but I'm so glad we got a chance to record this episode and have another fun talk about the things that are going on in the leadership world right now.
Yeah, no, this is going to be great. I can't believe that was episode 30. And then I actually had you on my podcast where you shared like all these fascinating things about your life. And I know that's not for this podcast, but very interesting stuff filled with fame and Hollywood and.
On the edges, I was associated with it. Thank you. Yes, that was a blast. It was you asked some wonderful questions that frankly don't get asked very often. So I was more than happy to share because some of my upbringing was rather unique in some of the areas that I had an opportunity to grow up in and go to school in. So it was fun to share those backstories. All right, so today we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world today from a leadership perspective? We're recording this in February 2024. There's a significant economic uncertainty going on. There's a significant amount of layoffs that have happened in the last 6 months, especially in the tech sector. And this has caused not only a lot of challenge for individuals who are looking for new positions as a result of being let go or some other circumstance, but it's also causing a significant amount of challenges for the organizations, not just in terms of economic downturn. We're going to talk specifically about the hiring side and some of the critical programs that these companies had put in place during the good times. And what really happens to those, and what do we as leaders need to be thinking about and be aware of in order to ensure that when we come out of this, everything goes back to, at least a decent state, and we're not left, feeling the impact of some rash decisions that we made there before. So, Miranda, with that, would you share just a little bit about what you've been seeing lately in some of the things, especially from the hiring side, because I know you have had some experience in currently hiring for roles that are open within your organization. And share with us, what is it like on the hiring side with this massive supply of and people who want to come to work?
Yeah, it's honestly, and I'm not trying to say this from a woe is me kind of perspective. Like, I want to make sure I am answering these questions with the utmost empathy because I know there are loads of people out there going through very difficult times. You know, I know some folks who have now been unemployed for well over a year and they're struggling. They're struggling to get their resumes looked at to land even the initial interviews. So I just want to be very mindful and give that disclaimer that by no means is this to underplay the difficulty that is happening in this industry right now in tech in general with, you know, landing interviews and landing jobs. So the net result, though, of the sheer amount of layoffs that we've had in 2023 and 2022, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of folks in tech have been impacted. And, you know, it's all over the news, it's all over our LinkedIn feeds. The saturation of talent is massive. If you recall back in 2021, you would post a job, even if you were a well-known brand, and you know, you had to struggle to get that top-notch talent because it was so competitive. I posted a job for a renewals manager back in October, And within a few hours, I had something like 1,500 applicants on
I
LinkedIn,
think
and
I remember your post about that. I was shocked. That blew me away that in a couple of hours, 1,500 applicants.
it was overwhelming. It was absolutely overwhelming. And the unfortunate thing is, I went through loads and loads of resumes. There were a crazy amount of qualified candidates, but there were also a crazy amount that weren't qualified. And, there's this, I don't want to call it like a desperation, but people see something that they could potentially fit. So they throw their resume in. But when you have this crazy amount that checks every single box, the folks that don't check every single box tend to get, deprioritized. So, that's one thing that is happening. I would love, though, to
Let me ask
talk a
you one
little.
question on that. Like, in just handling the volume of 1,500 applicants for a single position and still wanting to maintain, your interview process and a fair and unbiased objective selection criteria to find the best candidate for you, how did you even go about doing that? Because from the outside, that does frankly sound overwhelming. When normally you have, 10, 15, 20, you could get through that no problem. But 1,500, how'd you even get through
Yeah,
some of
it
this?
was very, 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 very difficult. And we also don't have dedicated recruiting resources in our company, which is normal at this size of organization. So what I did, and I actually wrote out my process so people would understand. I apologized to folks saying that I wasn't going to be able to respond to each and every one of them one on one, because not only did I get 1,500 applicants, I also had hundreds of direct messages to me in my LinkedIn inbox of people telling me they're interested, telling me that they applied, selling themselves to me. I even had people doing videos and sending me videos to my LinkedIn inbox, and it almost became a full-time job of having to go through. And in the beginning, I was trying to directly reply to every single candidate that was in my inbox. And then I had to say, okay, I can't do it. It's impossible. So I felt terrible. So I wrote a message just on my LinkedIn, just saying, heads up, I see your messages. I can't get to them all. Here's what the process is. What I did is I scrubbed through the first couple hundred resumes and tried to find 10 to 20 qualified candidates that I could call and do a phone screen with. Out of the 10, I would then try to find five solid that could be passed through to the next round. And then we would, have just one or two more rounds. I try to keep the interview process very short and concise and move those through to the final round. And I would repeat that funnel until we had the candidate. I ended up hiring a former team member who actually held this role for me at another company. So they were in that funnel and in that pipeline, and they were a known entity for me, right? So I knew that the onboarding time would be much shorter, and they know how to work with me, I know how to work with them. They would need to learn the product, yada yada yada. But in general, that's how I ran it and how I have run it historically when I've had a high candidate funnel. I usually do first in, first out. I know that may seem unfair to some individuals, but when you have pages and pages and pages of resumes to go through, there's really no good way to look at every single resume, every single candidate. So you just have to prioritize somehow. And how I was prioritizing was first in, first out.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
That's fair.
I don't have like a fancy applicant management system
I was,
tool that
yeah,
would
can scan
leverage
and
AI and clean them out for me, surface the best I am. It's Miranda AI.
Yeah, Miranda AI. I like that. I like that.
So.
That's one powerful piece, one powerful tool right
Yeah.
there. Okay, so that's a fascinating one. And, not everybody's going to have access to Miranda AI or other AI, let's say. And as in a leadership position, like the sole goal is getting the best person for the role, and you found that through working your process. Now, whether there was 10 people in that pipe or 1,500 people in that pipe, you would have run the same exact thing, right? It sounds like
Yes.
that was your process. So the sheer fact that it was 1500 made it overwhelming, but ultimately from a leadership perspective, you were still doing the same thing regardless that you would have done 2 years ago when times were good.
Absolutely. I have a full defined interview process where, you know, I put an interview team together, we do a kickoff for the process, talk about the role, and then we divvy up the things that we're each going to interview for. Like somebody may take ownership on, you know, relationship management and communication, and somebody may take ownership of culture, and, you know, you get the idea. Like yeah. We figure out the key attributes, and then everybody has a list of potential questions that they should ask. We try really hard, at least I always have, to make it as fair as possible and run every candidate through a similar process.
Well, the fair piece is the key one. And I love that you do the prep with your interview team beforehand. I've certainly been through interview processes where you get asked the same question in every interview and you're like, oh, you guys didn't prepare at all, did you? And it sends a totally wrong signal to the candidate about, you know, yeah. The candidate prepared a lot. But when the organization doesn't prepare, it looks pretty bad. Now, in times like this, it's a little different given the supply. But the fairness piece is so key, right? And tell me more about your experience, you know, having been through ups and downs in these various economic cycles that we've had. And this isn't going to last, right? So what do leaders need to be thinking about during this time when they have the pick of whatever they want and they can do whatever they want because there's so many candidates? However, this isn't going to last forever.
Yeah, so there are a few ways we can take this conversation. We can talk about maybe some of the bad behaviors I'm seeing in organizations. We could talk about the internal talent management. I actually wrote a post about that yesterday or the day before about having like C players, and you got to level them up or they got to go, right? This is another thing that management should be looking at right now. Yep. Not to be cold and callous. It's just when you do have access to A players, like so many A players, how could you not take advantage of that? I think where I want to start though first is the bad behaviors that I'm kind of seeing go on in the industry. And many people that I know that are interviewing are experiencing a lot of these bad behaviors, and this will catch up to people.
Yeah.
So one is interviewing and ghosting because mm-hmm. people are so overwhelmed, they don't get back. And then the candidate just never knows where they stood or what happened. Even at the initial phone screen, if that candidate gave you time, showed up for a phone screen, they're not the right person, just don't just ghost them. That is the worst. They will remember that. They will remember your organization, even if it's like a bad actor that's doing the phone screening and they're ghosting, they're going to remember your organization. And especially in customer success, words gets around. People remember.
It's a small community.
Very small community. People talk. Other things that I've seen happen is people like extending the interview process because they want to make sure they're getting the best candidate because they have so many to pick from. That is also, I would put that in bad behavior bucket when it extends past a certain period of time. It should not take you 2 or 3 months to get through an interview process. Just absolutely shouldn't, but it is for a lot of folks. A lot of candidates are going through crazy interview processes. In 2020, 2021, I should say, we actually saw a big correction where the employers were hiring in record time because they knew if they had someone that was solid, they needed to get them through that process quicker, they could lose them. Now they've just flipped their mindset and said, well, we have all of these candidates. It doesn't matter if a few pull out, they'll wait. We can take our time. Whether it's deliberate or not deliberate, the message you're sending to the candidates is that you don't care about them, their time, or value them. You don't want to start in a long-term employment relationship on that foot. People will remember that. People also, like, there are people out there that are really hurting, you know, really hurting and are struggling with mental health because they don't know if they're going to be able to make their mortgage payment, mm-hmm. how they're going to feed their families. And I see people being strung along for 2, 3 plus months in an interview process. It's crazy.
Agreed. I was working with somebody recently and they shared some of the, I was coaching them on part of their interview process and they were asked to do a presentation and I was asking questions about where this was in the interview cycle. And I was blown away by the fact that this level of depth of request from preparation, from presentation, from the whole package that they asked this candidate to do was very early in the process. And so they phone screen, and then they said, oh, here's a bunch of data, do this analysis, come up with all this stuff, it was taking roughly in the probably 6 to 8+ hour range. And that was only to get to the next stage, which was then the phone interviews, right? I was like, that's ludicrous. There's no point. And somebody somewhere said, oh, well, we have so many people, let's weed them out first by making them do all this work. And it's like, no, you can figure that out if you ask the right questions. You don't make people talk through endless
questions. You see where the logic comes in from the employer side. But I'm just going to put that in the bad behavior bucket.
Yeah.
Because you're asking somebody to go above and beyond as you would do. If you were a candidate, right? If I had an employer, I just met them on the phone. It's like dating, right? You're like, hey, do you want to have a coffee? You show up and then the person proposes marriage, right? It's like you're moving too fast, you know, and it's just kind of disrespectful of their time. I was going to bring that up. Some of the projects that I see these candidates having to do blow my mind now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just shocked. I've seen some very complex data analytics projects. I've seen very robust, like, business reviews, not just your standard, give me a template, but give me a business review on my product. they're a candidate. They've not even been through your training.
Right.
I just interviewed and hired a CSM recently. They accepted today, and I did it on the down low because I didn't want to be bombarded with a boatload of applicants. And we work with a very complex data product. So when I was thinking about what did I want to have this candidate do to show me, or, you know, allow me to see their ability to show up in front of a customer, I'm like, I can't have them do anything about our product because it's too complex. So I said, why don't you choose your favorite business tool and then treat us like you're onboarding us? And it was wonderful. They chose Slack, which everybody knows Slack.
Good.
It allows them to be their best selves when they show up, but still give me the snapshot into how they handle, like, those high stress situations, right? Because
That's all we need to assess, right? We don't need to assess the depth of knowledge because, as you said, they don't have it. When I was in the seat running teams and stuff, that was exactly my approach too, was always, okay, here's the project. Pick whatever technology you want and then do exactly like you just said. And we got some of the most fascinating presentations because it showed us a glimpse of, one, what they were really passionate about and interested in, and two, how well they could package everything up and communicate something to us, which we knew nothing about. Oftentimes, like, they picked something that, you know, the group of us who were in the audience just didn't know. Like, we weren't familiar. Slack is awesome. Everybody knows Slack. But there were some things we told them, anything technical is cool. So we had some very, very unique presentations on stuff that we knew nothing about. And if we could walk away from that saying, I learned something, then that was a really great sign that that person could, you know, articulate complex things in a way that people who didn't understand it, which was kind of like what our customers were at the time, they would do a very good job with that. And it was really, really cool. So that's awesome.
I really think that if employers are giving these candidates things to do that are going to take them more than an hour or two, should pay them. They should pay them.
This one that I was telling you about before, I literally got almost crossed my mind This is kind of like a consulting engagement. Do they have this data and need this done and haven't hired the person yet? So they're just trying to get labor on the free and cheap and see how what they come up with, and then they're going to take that and actually do something with it. Like, that would be ultimate bad behavior.
It would be ultimate bad behavior, but it's funny, you know, kind of shifting topics, when companies are struggling, maybe not even struggling, when the pressure to be more capital efficient,
yes,
is on, like the board is applying pressure to boatloads of companies. And if you are listening to this podcast right now and you don't report to a board and you're always wondering what's going on in the boardroom right now, I guarantee you the words capital efficiencies, saving money, expanding runway, you know, all of those things right now are probably being discussed in the boardroom. And what I find is when that kind of heat ramps up, you know, sometimes I'm going to stop saying bad behaviors, but choices that otherwise wouldn't be made are made.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of what people are feeling.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things being cut, a lot of programs being cut, you know, all of that stuff is happening right now, and resources are tight. So, you know, all the layoffs that have happened, that work is still there. Yeah. And that then gets spread around to all the folks that are still there.
Yep.
So the workload hasn't gone down. And in many cases, the workload has gone up.
Oh, 100%. I think the phrase of, well, certainly all of 2023 and carrying on into 2024 is do more with less. And it's like, well, in certain areas, that might be okay. And in other areas, it's definitely not okay when it comes to mental health, when it comes to just having a life, when it comes to doing something beyond what your day job is. So, Miranda, what are some of the programs and things that you've seen cut that, you know, are having a more adverse impact than we would like, even though we know where the pressure is coming from?
The first one that, you know, look, I led HR before, so I was at the center of this. I know a lot of people know me for customer success, but you know this, Nils, I also had HR for many years. The first one that I've seen cut a lot is the budgets for DE&I programs.
Yep.
Quite frankly, we made tremendous progress in 2020, 2021 with Black Lives Matter movement and various other movements that, you know, poked up then. And I have seen a lot of folks that are near and dear to my heart and that I'm close to who were leading DE&I programs lose their budgets, lose their jobs. It's sad, and it will, pardon my language, bite us in our asses down the line.
Yep, I agree. 100% agree. Changes like this can't not have an impact. Just like they weren't present for a very long time and it had a significant impact. And then they were present for a brief blip. And now if they go out, we're going to end up right back in the same place, and history absolutely will repeat itself in some form or
fashion. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Other programs that I have seen cut, learning and development. Fortunately, that one as well breaks my heart, because look, I get it. Like, you're trying to look and see where can you cut, and learning and development, I'll be honest, would probably be an area I would look at as well. If I had to pick between a headcount, a tool that I knew we were going to need, or learning and development, I'd probably look at learning and development. But investing in your employees now will create efficiencies, will help them grow. Like, you don't want folks in your organization that are just, they get to almost good, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You want folks that get to good and go to great.
Yeah.
If you have folks that are just almost good, you're going to be constantly chasing efficiencies. You're going to constantly be chasing, how do we improve our bottom line? How do we improve our revenue flow? Investing in folks' knowledge and helping them grow and get better every day, organization, quite frankly.
Oh, and it impacts every single person inside your organization. right? Regardless of where the budget was allocated beforehand, if it was primarily in the leadership ranks or if it was across the board or stipends or whatever there was, I feel this one across the board. And I have conversations with people every day talking about the leadership MBA. And some people, you know, are not in a position to fund things for themselves. And so they are tied to their company's ability to support them. At this point in time, there's very little of that going on. And my advice to them, and always my response, and this has been true for me for the last 15 years, is there's only one chief that can make the call, right? You and I talk about this a lot, being the CEO of your career. And the as much as I love organizations taking control and supporting the growth and development of their people, the reality is we're going to go through economic times like this now and in the future, and you're never going to have a perfect sweet spot where an organization delivers something to you on a silver platter. So in those cases, it is up to you, and you have to make the tough call that, yes, if I invest X amount of dollars today, what can I expect to get in the next 1, 2, 3 years? Because if that return is there, then it doesn't matter how much you spend today, despite what it looks like when you're staring down the nose of an investment. The reality is you got to take a little bit longer term view. And I think organizations do too, right? Like, yeah, you're cutting costs, but at what expense? What's going to happen in 1 year and 2 years and 3 years down the line when you haven't spent a dime on developing any leader in your organization and more than half of them have been leaders for less than 2 years? Like, you're going to have some trouble. You're going to have a lot of trouble, right? And it can be solved.
I was just, you know, sitting down a little bit ago to get some thoughts out on paper. I tend to do that. And I was writing out stuff like, management is lonely. And
I just actually wrote that in a note to myself today because it was a key point I wanted to make. That's right. Yeah, it is.
The thing is, you know, sometimes we promote the, you know, our top performers into these management roles.
Most times.
We expect them to just hop in and thrive and just instinctually know what to do and how to lead and how to manage. And, you know, the reality is it never works like that.
No.
There is never a one size fits all management guide because when you manage people, there are probably 15 different personalities in your organization.
Right.
And each individual could have 5 different personalities.
Depending on the day.
Depends on the day, myself included.
Me too. I know. Yeah.
So having the resources and support, not just for first-time managers, but for managers like myself that have 15 plus years experience doing it.
Yep.
I have days where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for a long time.
You got to come join us in the Leadership MBA, Miranda. We'd have some fun. And there is no one-size-fits-all solution to everybody's problems. What is I found to be the most successful approach is to have an entire leadership toolkit full of tools to be able to adapt to the situations you're going to go through. So as a leadership coach, I will never know the million different variations of challenges that you're going to face on a daily basis. However, I know that million different variations of challenges will all fall under one of these tools in one of these areas that I cover. And if I can empower leaders with toolkits, even everybody from early stage and the most recent cohort, we had people who had been in leadership positions for 25 and even 30 years, went through the program and came out glowing saying, I have been through so many leadership trainings and I never learned any of this. This is actually dramatically helping me. And that makes me, of course, beam and you can see my smile
on my face. Right? And I promise I did not cue this up for you to do an infomercial.
I know.
I genuinely, I'm not kidding. I have had one of those days today where I'm like, holy smoke. Boy, sometimes I think I know what I'm doing and then I'm like, oh, snap. And that's the thing.
I've been doing
this for 15 years and I don't mind saying that. I will say that in front of everybody that I have days where I'm like, holy smokes. That one threw me for a loop or something like that, right?
Yep.
Think about the newer managers though. Would I have said that out loud 15 years ago?
No way.
Oh, now I, you know, it's not that I don't care. I do care, but I'm also more real about life and understanding that things are nuanced and it's never A or B. It's usually, you know, somewhere in the middle. And
And it's also never done. Right? There is no, I've been doing this for 15 years. I've been doing this 20, 25 years. I'm done. If you think like that, you are done, literally and figuratively. But you're not going to learn anymore. If you're not learning, you're not growing. So regardless of what level you're at, everybody should always be thinking about how can I acquire new tools, acquire new skills, improve in whatever area. It doesn't only have to be in leadership. It can be anywhere across the board in your life you want.
Totally. And I will say, you know, when I was running HR at a previous company, I had folks from every generation, some that were born in the 1940s, believe it or not, late 1940s, all the way up to Gen Z.
Wow.
So I had a real tall order with my team of making sure that we were just accounting for the different needs and the different personalities. And here's the thing, when companies start cutting, just to bring it back, cutting these budgets and setting people, you know, on this trajectory and making them people managers and not providing them resources, they may not have the skills or the tools to be able to think about those types of things. Like, what does somebody I'm managing who's, you know, 30 years older than me need versus who's fresh out of college, right? They have very different needs, very different wants. And you have to adjust your management style and just how you show up for them.
That's right. And
organizations have to be very careful. And I say this out loud because those who make cuts in the wrong areas now, you're going to be okay for the next 6 months to a year. Yep. But I think in H2 of this year, we're going to see like the hiring probably peak back up.
Yep.
I just don't think it's going to last much longer because we all of 2023 was a bit of a bloodbath. So far, it's February 8th. It's been really rough already this year. Everything that I'm seeing and hearing from the folks I know in PE firms, VCs, and just taking a look at what's going on with the economy in general, and it's also an election year, I'm imagining H2, we're going to see a little bit of stabilization. And the budgets are going to start opening back up. I think a lot of the startups that are running out of money will have already been absorbed or, you know, gone under. And that's just, it's going to clean itself up. And as soon as that happens and hiring opens back up, those who weren't mindful of the experience that they've provided for their employees and candidates and everything over the last year and a half should be very cautious because they're going to have major attrition risk in their organization.
100%. And this, it gets to the heart of one of the points I like to reinforce with every leader I ever talk to or work with, or pretty much anybody. This is a long-term game. Everything, right? Whether we're talking employees, whether we're talking interview process, whether we're talking culture, whether we're talking DE&I, whether we're talking leadership skills, it's all a long-term game. And I think in the, you know, here and now, and especially when things are difficult, it's really hard to see longer term, but we have to take a step back. We have to look at the longer term. We have to look at what the impact of that decision today of not fulfilling, you know, our, what we committed to a year ago from a DE&I perspective is going to look like in 2 years and 3 years and 5 years down the line. If we can't do that, then we're going to get stuck and we'll be right back where we were and looking back saying, how did we end up in the same place as we were 2 years ago? It feels like we haven't gone anywhere. And we want to avoid that. Hopefully.
Yeah, I totally want to avoid that.
Yeah.
Well, progress, cool. We want to move forward, not backward, right?
That's right. You're either growing or you're dying. Exactly. Famous Tony Robbins quote, and which I believe, you know, there's only two directions that you can go. All right, Miranda, it's been an absolute pleasure. We could keep talking about this for days, I think, but we'll wrap it up here and look forward to having you back in the future again, talking about all kinds of fun leadership topics. Thank you so much for your time and insights and sharing with us what you're seeing in the world right now.
Yeah, let's do it again in 2026 and then talk about everything that unfolds in 2025 as an impact to what happens in 2023 and 2024.
Deal. 100%. This podcast will still be rolling. We'll still be friends. We'll still be rolling. We will do it. We will absolutely tie that bow. And everybody heard it first. We got, you know, a couple years to go. And but we're taking the long-term view. Like that's a perfect example. Let's plan a podcast in 2 years from now to talk about what happened over this time. That's a perfect example. And I love it. Absolutely on board. All right, Miranda, thanks so much.
Thank you.